The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have John Jolly, president and CEO at a company called Syncurity. That's SYNCURITY.net, Syncurity. John, how are you?
I'm great.
Well, he is the right man, the right place at the right time. You pick up a newspaper, you stand at a bus stop, you walk into a 7-Eleven, get a Slurpee. Everyone's talking about this thing called WannaCry. I thought we'd bring in John and maybe take the lid off what's going on with WannaCry, maybe talk about the history of it and how it positions, and mostly how it's going to impact our listeners, federal IT professionals. And that's what everyone wants to know. Bring in someone who's knowledgeable. Let's talk about this malware exploit and see how, you know, maybe their company can help you. Maybe it can't. We'll find out more about their company. But first, John, tell us about your background, please.
Sure. I've been in the security industry for 30 years, spent 20 years at the federal government and 8 years with defense contractors. And for the last 3 years, I've been working with small startups in the D.C. area.
My. So you have almost a perfect background. You have a good federal background and and I've hung around with some of these young cybersecurity professionals with startups. They're very creative and dynamic and hardworking and hard to nail down, aren't they? They're in so many different things.
They are. They are.
Yeah. I went to your LinkedIn profile. I saw that you're associated with Mach 37, folks out there.
We love Mach 37. Mach 37 was the launching pad, literally, for our company, and we wouldn't be here today without them.
Good, good, good. Well, you're very humble. You also have 2 master's degrees. Let's talk about it. I would brag if I were you.
So I have a master's in technical management from Johns Hopkins and an MBA in finance from Wharton.
That puts you in the perfect catbird seat to talk about WannaCry virus. So what the heck is this all about? Give us a thumbnail sketch of what it's all about and what it means to our listeners, please.
So WannaCry is a virus that obviously has somewhat literally taken the world by storm in the last week. And there's a couple key things to understand about it that are making it worse than your typical virus. The first is that it's spreading very, very rapidly, and it's spreading using what is alleged to be a unpatched exploit called Eternal Blue that was apparently an NSA exploit that was released and was.
I think what happened was the NSA came up with this exploit, and hackers found out about it and released it. Is that right?
That's correct.
Good, good, good. Good to know. So it only affects certain types of systems. So if you are sitting there with your Apple, do you have to be worried? Is it just Windows machines, all Windows machines?
So it's an exploit that affects Windows machines, specifically legacy versions of Windows, but all the way up through the current version. It's worse for legacy versions because Microsoft's in business to make money. They want you to buy their new products, and they had not released patches for legacy versions until recently.
Right.
Until the infection became public. So WannaCry does a couple of things. It spreads rapidly using this NSA vulnerability. But the second thing that it does is it encrypts your files, and it asks you to pay a ransom.
So 200,000 individuals, 10,000 businesses. What about the federal government? Should govies be worried about this?
Everybody should be worried about this. Everybody should be vigilant. And I just heard this morning that there has been the first reported instance of a federal infection.
Yeah, I have a friend, my neighbor, by the name of David Rubal, R-U-B-A-L. He's on top of every – I don't know how this guy must never sleep. And he put a tweet out this morning. He said that the WannaCry found on U.S. Army machine – marking first federal government infection. So that's not good, is it?
It's not good.
Yeah. So what's the best thing to do? I mean, how do I identify this? How do you know if you're vulnerable? What should you do if you're listening to the show right now?
Well, first of all, if you're running an unpatched version or unpatched versions of Windows in your environment from Windows XP all the way up to Windows 10, then you're vulnerable. So I like to say there are 3 simple things or 3 things that you should be focused on in order to prevent the infection and do the best job you can to defend against this. The first is keep your systems current. So that means run a current version of the operating system, keep your operating system patched, and keep your antivirus and your security tools patched and up to date. If you're running antivirus and it's not current, that's, you know, it's a bit like, why do you buy an expensive security system for your house and then leave the door unlocked?
Huh.
The second thing is you want to back up your systems. So you want to back up, and if you're an enterprise like the federal government, you want to have an offsite backup strategy or some strategy for recovery, because even if the virus gets in, even if it encrypts some of your systems, if you have a backup, then you can restore from backup and probably avoid having to pay the ransom. And then the third simple thing is really to stay vigilant, to be focused in education. Make sure your workforce is not clicking on links, or encourage them not to click on links that don't make sense. Encourage people to stop, take a breath before they click on something, and think about it. Because at the end of the day, although this spreads via a very high-tech vulnerability, the infections are coming in, or the initial breach of the enterprise is coming in on a low-tech phishing email.
P-H-I-S-I-N-G, phishing. So let's say I'm working for an agency, and I'm using Windows 10, and I'm all happy as can be. However, the person next to me might make a mistake with an older operating system, get vulnerable, get attacked. So this can affect the whole system, can't it?
Yes, it can.
That's the problem, is the weakest link. the weakest link is going to make you most vulnerable.
Right, and the weakest link at the end of the day is as much people as it is technology. And that's something that is very often overlooked in this domain.
I went to your website this morning, and I'll repeat it again because it's kind of tricky on the radio, syncurity.net. Went to a blog there written by a guy named JP. Seems to be up to snuff with what's going on here and gives very, very practical recommendations for what to do. What's his name again?
So his name is JP Bourget. He's our founder and chief security officer, and he is very up to snuff on what's going on.
Yeah, and he talks about what larger organizations can do. And if you're just Joe Sixpack working out of your house, make sure you're not on XP or something older in patch. And I think most people understand that right now. But when you're in a larger organization and you have to manage systems, then it gets much more difficult, doesn't it?
It gets much more difficult. And in fact, there are lots of people running around right now saying patch, 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 patch. Well, that's great, but there are also reasons that it may be difficult for large enterprises to patch. If you're a hospital and you're running embedded versions of older embedded versions of Windows on your MRI machine, maybe you patch it and maybe the MRI machine doesn't work anymore. Maybe it's never been tested with the latest version of Windows. So it's easy to say patch, but it's not always as trivial to do that as many people would make out.
And I just want to make a statement. We talked about the federal government being affected here. What this has found is in something called Fort Huachuca, H-U-A-C-H-U-C-A, and WannaCry found on U.S. Army machine. So my guess is it maybe is an embedded something like Windows CE. Is that an example of embedded operating system?
Yes, it could be.
So it's not just a human being. It just happens to be on a system, and the system got attacked, and something happened with that machine. So, you know, you can get up in the morning, brush your teeth, eat vegetables, wear your seatbelt, and do everything right, and something could happen with systems in your machine that you're not responsible for.
That's correct. You know, what I like to say about this, about the cybersecurity domain is people expect perfect protection all the time, and it's really not possible any more than it is in the physical domain. If President Trump was right down the street from us right now, there'd be a whole lot more security around us than there is right now. And so I think the key point to understand is you have to, if you're an enterprise, you have to understand where your valuable assets are and work to protect those, and understand you can't always protect everything all the time. And people are one of the biggest challenges in this space.
I went to your LinkedIn profile and I clicked on the company. And I started reading carefully this morning, and I just wrote down a few key phrases the way your company is described. And I love this phrase. It's called security orchestration. I think of Mozart and symphonies. And so what you're orchestrating is an appropriate way to make sure your system does not get attacked by something like this.
Correct. So in today's enterprise, particularly large public enterprises like the federal government or large private sector enterprises, they've all gone out in reaction to things like WannaCry. And they've bought lots and lots of point solutions that solve part of the problem. And typically these point solutions are sensors. So they find bad things in your networks. They find things that human beings need to look at. But at the end of the day, what often happens is all these alerts, as we call them, get dumped into a shared inbox or someplace where they're manually worked off by teams. And so what we do is orchestrate the process of getting those alerts into a platform where humans could look at them and could leverage technology to work them off faster, reducing, not necessarily preventing the attack, but reducing the impact of the attack and lessening the chance of a breach.
What I want to do is take a little break and come back, and I want to focus on a word that is used to describe your company, and the word is extensible, security, operations platform. The word extensible, I think, is really important here because no one really knows what's going to happen down the road. If you have a system that can react to changes better than others, it may be a system to take a look at. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, John Jolly, President and CEO at Syncurity. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, John Jolly, President and CEO of a company called Syncurity, S-Y-N-C-U-R-I-T-Y. I want to open up with a quote from a cybersecurity professional by the name of Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett says that cyber attacks are a bigger threat than nuclear weapons. What do you think of that one, John? Is that an exaggeration? I don't know.
There's a lot I would agree with Mr. Buffett on. I'm not quite sure if I'm sitting at ground zero that I would agree with him on that.
He probably doesn't have a CISSP after his name, does he?
Probably not.
not any SANS training either. I know the people at SANS and Paler up the street. Are you involved with SANS? Are you going to do anything with SANS in the next few months?
Yes, we are. In fact, we'll be exhibiting at the SANS SOC Summit in Crystal City on June 5th and 6th.
So if you're listening to this and you want to learn more, you can go to SANS and sign up for the little conference coming up in Crystal City. Take a train over there, grab John Jolly and say, John, a friend of mine has this problem, and maybe you can help them with something. Huh?
I will be there. I'll buy you a beer. Or you can buy me a beer.
Yeah, either way. Yeah. Well, what I've noticed is that there are people who work for agencies that may be reluctant to email you and may be reluctant to make a telephone call. But at a conference, they can kind of waltz up to you and go, are you the guy who's on the radio? Yeah, well, listen, I have a problem here. And then that's how the relationship starts. It's fascinating, this town, how people discuss challenges and problems. Well, one challenge and problem have is this idea of extensible and being flexible and open to change. So what your company provides is a platform that allows people to determine what's on their network, what's not, what their security status is. So what does your company provide?
So we provide a platform, and we've designed that platform to be extensible for a couple of reasons. First of all, as I mentioned in the past segment, everybody has bought these point solutions, but everybody's bought different point solutions. So you might have 10 systems in your security stack that are looking for bad stuff on your network, and somebody else may have a different 10 systems, and maybe they have 5 of the ones you have, and they have 5 different ones. But you're in a different industry, or you have different risk tolerance, you have different processes. So when you talk about orchestration, it's really about bringing people, processes, and technology together to drive better cybersecurity outcomes. But doing it, and what we do is we do it in a platform that we've made extensible so that it's easy to rapidly adapt the platform to different use cases, to different customers, and to the dynamic environment that we all live in, where you can go to bed on Thursday and Friday you wake up and find out that there's a new ransomware attack that's propagating around the globe.
So let's go back to the future. Let's go back in time, let's say a year ago, before there was any WannaCry out there. And so if we have a company or organization that is using your system, chances are that your system may have set up an alert saying, whoa, 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 someone did this in the system. We have to be proactive and do something about this. Is this what your system could have done in response to WannaCry?
Yes. And so one of the things that we see all the time, I mentioned earlier, WannaCry is the initial infection typically happens via a phishing email. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you can do in our system very well is monitor alerts around phishing. And you can track users, so you could track serial violators. So maybe the fourth time you click on a phish in 2 months, maybe you're going to get a visit from HR, as an example.
I don't want to do too much insider talk, but it's spear phishing, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G. And typically what happens is let's say I work with John. We send email back and forth all the time. And then he gets an email from John Gilroy at xyz.com. He goes, oh, I know John. And then all of a sudden it's, hey, click on this. And then people get deceived and actually click on it. And you can find out S-E-R-I-A-L, serial people who do that all the time, huh?
Yes.
To take stupid pills or what?
Well, it lots of them do. If it sounds too good to be true, it usually is.
Wow. I never thought of looking at an organization with 600 people, 6,000 people, and you probably have 1% in there who may not be the sharpest knives in the drawer who fall for these scams, and they legitimately put the rest of the organization at risk.
That's correct, and it only takes one, particularly with something like WannaCry.
So tell me about this thing called IR, Instant Response, and how you fit in that whole concept of instant response.
So instant response is a domain that security teams live in every day. And so what we talk about is we talk about two things that our product does or that we do really well. First is alert handling, and then the second is if you get an alert and it turns out to be a true positive, so somebody clicked on the link and their PC really got infected, their system really got infected, then that becomes an incident. And we handle those things separately in our product, but that's when we talk about incident response or IR, it's really about the spectrum of security operations.
So there's alerts, there's events, and there's incidents. What's the difference?
So an event is something that happens on your network. It may or may not be an alert. Then you have an alert, right? So you get an event can become an alert. It can become something concerning. And then if it's a true positive, if it's not a false positive, then it can turn into an incident. So part of the challenge is you have this big haystack of alerts that gets generated by all these sensors. And people need to look at that. They need to burn the haystack down. They need to figure out what's really important. And then once you've burned the haystack down, the idea is what we help you do is pick the needles up that are left and put a formal case management process around it.
Good. You know, years ago, I was in a gentleman's office at Tyson's Corner, and he talked about standing up a SOC in 48 hours, and I had no idea what that meant. He had explained that to me. And so you work very carefully with SOC security operations centers as well. Is that right?
That's correct. You can run a worldwide virtual SOC at our product, and we have multiple customers that do.
Mm. So what this does is it sets up a situation where you can test different environments and test different systems, I would imagine, for security. Is that right?
That's correct.
And so what you would do is you'd say, well, I would like to try to run this utility or run this app. What I could do is I could set up a test environment, and I can run it and see how it impacts other parts of the environment and make a decision based on that. So it sounds like it's preventing bad things from happening.
So one of the things you could actually use our product to do is you could actually consume test alerts with it, or you can do security testing with it. So you could send in, you could actually test your analyst or test your responders as an example.
Test
your system, and then the analysts see it and they say, oh, this is just testing. We're not going to worry about that.
So let's say you're working for Department of Transportation, and you want to see if your system is vulnerable to WannaCry. There's a possibility we could use your system and say, hey, let's come up with a virtual SOC and see what will happen in our system.
Yes, you could.
And find out if there's alert pops up. And then I think it's almost like, well, I was just down in Virginia Beach, and some of the houses there have to be built a certain length above the water because of flooding. So it's like what you're doing is saying, no, let's make this system prevent anything bad from happening. You can test out ahead of time. That's what these houses are done down there. That's all good.
And you could test for certain things. Now, if it's a zero day, it's really hard to test for a zero day. But what you can do is you can work on with your team your response plans, your processes, your timelines, so that when something unexpected happens, you respond as quickly as possible.
At the top of the show, I talked about your involvement with the National Security Alliance Cybersecurity Council. Tell us about these folks. What do they do?
So Intelligence National Security Alliance is a public-private sector organization in D.C. that works to foster exchange between the federal government and the private sector, specifically, and I worked on their Cybersecurity Council, and so specifically around the topic of cybersecurity. So the idea is to help be a thought leader in the space and help develop policy, help develop programs, and influence and be a thought leader.
If you go to Twitter and type in your company name, it's easy to find your tweets at SYNCURITY. If you want to follow me, I'm kind of hard to follow. You can follow me at Ray Gilray and find out what's going on Twitter. A lot of times you see interesting articles, and I want to take a little break here and come back and talk about an article I read this morning written by a fellow named Kyle Hansloven from Hunches Labs. And he talked about different ways that collaboration worked in finding the cure for the WannaCry malware and how different organizations get to, I think it's kind of fascinating how it broke out and how groups got together and tried to find out a solution to it. There wasn't one specific problem, but it's interesting how these cybersecurity professionals can work in cohort, just like the National Security Alliance Cybersecurity Council does, try to have everyone get involved in solving some of these complex problems. Let's take a break, come back, talk about vulnerability, and maybe talk about insider threat and talk about how you can prevent bad things from happening to your network. Thanks for listening to Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, our guest is John Jolly, President and CEO at Syncurity. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, John Jolly, President and CEO of a company called Syncurity. Kind of tough in the radio. I'll spell it for you. S-Y-N-C-U-R-I-T-Y. And you go to syncurity.net. More information, including blog articles, you can go to their Twitter feed at Syncurity, S-Y-N-C-U-R-I-T-Y, see what's going on. Television adventures in the last couple weeks talking about WannaCry. I saw those, right? Was that fun?
Oh, it was blast.
Yeah, it was real good. Yeah, I've been in the NBC studios a couple of times over the years and other ones as well. So in the TV spot, it talks about 200,000 systems infected, 150 countries, mostly outside the United States, or where are most of these?
Mostly outside the United States.
But looming and could attack us here.
Yes.
So attack, response, attack, response, attack, almost like martial arts. You know, you throw at the right and they block, the left, they block. And so what's happening is this WannaCry is mutating and evolving. Is that right?
Yes. So originally the original virus was sinkholed by a couple of analysts registering, security researchers registering a domain. They threw a kill switch in the virus. But since then, we have now seen versions of it that do not have that kill switch. So absolutely, like all attackers and like all threats, they change rapidly. It's a very dynamic threat environment.
Earlier in the show, I quoted Warren Buffett. Well, now I'm going to move up the scale and quote IBM. Well, they know everything at IBM. And so they did a study, and they talked about insider threats. And their study was the Cybersecurity Intelligence Index, which sounds pretty impressive. What they said is that 60% of all intrusions are due to insider threats. And so if you're working for an agency, let's say HHS, and one of the agencies there, and somebody clicks on an email and actually infects a machine with this, that could be perceived as an unintentional insider threat, couldn't it?
Yes, it could.
Bang, they're set up for trouble. So how can a system prevent some – the guy could have – you could have a PhD and be stupid and click on these things. So how do you prevent something like that from happening?
Well, you have to get better. You have to organize in advance, and you have to have processes in place that help you respond more rapidly. And one of the things you can do as part of that process is, as I said earlier, you can track who's doing that unintentional clicking, and you can attempt to educate them and reduce the number of times that happens. And when it does happen, you want to be able to triage it, to get the alert, and to sort out what you need to do next as quickly as possible.
So that is your instant response flow platform, and your information on your website talks about being context enrichment. So what does context enrichment mean for an instant response platform?
So very often, actually almost all the time, you'll get an alert from one of these security systems, and it'll have an IP address, an internet protocol address, so you'll know where the alert's coming from, or you'll maybe know what the external system is that sent the email that's suspect, but you won't have a lot of context. You don't necessarily know whose laptop was compromised, whose asset was compromised. Is it the CEO's laptop? Is it the janitor's laptop? It might make a big difference in how you respond to know that. One example use case we talk about is the idea that if maybe you're a publicly traded company and it's the quiet period around release of financials, you may want to work alerts coming out of your finance shop at a higher priority. Well, when you first get those alerts in, maybe you don't know that they're from the finance shop. Odds are you don't. So in the past, very typically, what security analysts would have to do is what I call swivel in their chair. They would get the alert and they would look at the alert. They would say, okay, now I'm going to go to this other system. I'm going to look up and see who owns this asset. Well, part of what we do is we facilitate the process of automating that. So what we like to say is when the analyst puts eyeballs on an alert, it's to make a decision, not to go to the command line and do 10 other things.
Because guess what? It's got to be done in a timely manner, doesn't it?
It does.
What are you going to do, sit and think about it for 2 days? You're going to get killed.
Especially in today's environment.
My. And so I don't know, when I think about this, I think of software developers. A lot of software developers have these things called workflow, where one person does this, then it goes to this system, then it goes as tested, then reiterated. And so it sounds like there's a workflow involved in this incident response.
There is. There's typical workflows will be different for different enterprises, but they're a class of things that you typically do for different types of attacks. So if it's a phish, a PHISH fish, then what you will typically do is you will pull the email, you look at the headers, you'll do some analysis. And so the whole point being that you want to automate those workflows and make them repeatable as much as possible. If you have really smart senior analysts and nobody has enough of them, they can document a workflow or codify a workflow for a junior analyst to follow. So it's also about the ability to force multiply your workforce and force multiply some of your senior people.
There is a group out there called the National Identity Theft Resource Center, and they have all kinds of interesting quotes, especially given the fact of this WannaCry going out there. And they look at federal agencies, and the quote from this group is that most agencies don't have dedicated professional who focus on insider threat. And so you better have some kind of a system or a platform that can focus on it, because not everyone has that kind of talent or skill, or maybe some of those skills are walking out the door.
That's correct.
Yeah, interesting. What happens is this lets you prioritize alerts, because there's false positives, positives, and what you can do is you can take a look at something and say, well, this is an interesting incident that happened on this Windows CE machine, and you can bring that up on the scale rather than something that maybe not is obvious or has many indicators of being a problem. Is that right?
That's right. And another good example is you can potentially correlate something that happened today with something that happened 2 or 3 weeks ago, that maybe at the time it happened 2 or 3 weeks ago, it seemed innocuous. You said this is a false positive. But now in the context of this new alert that's come in, maybe that was laying the groundwork for an attack, and maybe it was much more important.
When I read about WannaCry, I see companies like Nissan get attacked. I mean, you would think that they would have some professionals there, would be careful and see what's going on. But if Nissan can get attacked, I imagine everyone's vulnerable.
All the companies getting attacked have two things in common. They have human beings involved, and human beings make mistakes, and they have the legacy. They have the legacy Windows systems or unpatched Windows systems.
So the legacy system. So number one is move up and away. So what's your guess in the federal government, my listening audience? What percentage of federal government users are using, I guess, XP or Windows 2003 servers? That many? I don't even know if there's figures on that available.
I don't know if there are either. I would imagine at this point most have migrated, but you may be in a situation where you have a mission critical system that you have not had funding to update, and so your choice is: do I turn it off, or do I continue to operate with the old operating system? And it's not always about just upgrading the operating system; it's about upgrading the software that runs on that system so that it can function properly on a newer version of the operating system.
And I'll use a word that's used in my world called dependencies. There may be a system out there that has many dependencies, and one of them is a legacy system, and the information that's provided by the legacy system is a key component of your existing system. So all of a sudden, you may be all patched, but there may be a legacy system feeding in the years that can make you vulnerable.
That's correct. And the other thing that often happens in complex enterprise environments is people don't know where those legacy systems are. So, it's the server in the corner that nobody wants to turn off, but nobody's really sure what it does anymore either.
I can remember years ago they were doing a law office downtown Washington, D.C., and they opened up a wall, and there was like a Windows server sitting in there. It was a Windows NT server that was literally behind the wall, running, and no one even knew it was there. I mean, and this happens in the commercial world. You can't tell me it doesn't happen in the federal government as well. Things happen.
I'm sure it does.
Yeah, hidden in the middle of nowhere, especially small agencies. So what about continuous improvement? I talked about software developers before. How does your system assist in an agency continuously improving their defense status against attacks?
So one of the core concepts of our system is to provide an end-to-end platform in which you can do your security operations. And because we have an extensible architecture, you can use that architecture and use the features in our platform to define metrics and measures that are relevant for you and your business, whether they're operational metrics or whether they proxy for risk. And the whole idea is that you define them and then you assess them over time, and you can measure the performance of your team, you can measure the performance of your enterprise, you can measure the risk posture of your enterprise, but you do it in the context of your environment. So not necessarily here's Syncurity's risk measure, right? What we want you to do is we want you to think about where your critical assets are, think about what matters to you, and instantiate that data into our platform and use that to come up with measures.
I would think that there are organizations inside and outside the government that use the old guts and guesswork, maybe a spreadsheet. I mean, maybe old Ralph in the corner knows what to do. And I think it's 2017 here. Something's got to change.
It does. We very typically see organizations that are attempting to collaborate, have a security team collaborate around a shared inbox. And, you know, you might go pick up an alert and start working it and then find out half an hour later that three other people have already looked at it. So
that's
those are the types
where the workflow comes in.
Exactly.
So it can reduce effort because it can reduce mirrored tasks, repeatable tasks. I never thought that workflow could do that, especially for a system like this. Well, great. Let's take a break. Come back. We'll talk more about WannaCry, talk about cybersecurity, commercial software, and maybe focus in on strategy to avoid this happening in the future. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we are speaking with John Jolly, President and CEO at Syncurity. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, John Jolly, President and CEO at a company called Syncurity, S-Y-N-C-U-R-I-T-Y, just over the river there in Arlington. And what they do is they work with organizations inside and outside the government to help them prevent getting hit by attacks like the WannaCry. That's what you guys do. That's pretty simple. We were talking in the break about what perils. What's this kind of similar to that you don't do? And I was thinking about this senator. You read the newspaper last week. He was in this race, and he collapsed, and he was rushed to the hospital. And he was tweeting out, hey, I'm fine, I'm fine. In fact, even on Capitol Hill, they're talking about, worried about him. And maybe there's parallels between the medical world and infections in systems. Is there a parallel there?
Yeah, there's absolutely a parallel. I would call that a false positive. So, you know, that's much like an alert that comes in, and it looks bad, but you poke into it, you dig into it, and there's nothing there. Or maybe the user clicked on the link, but it didn't go anywhere because the domain was sinkholed. So, you know, that's a false positive, and there's not a true infection. Still concerning behavior, so something you got to follow up on. If you collapse in a race from some kind of pain, even if you're not having a heart attack, you're probably going to have a follow up with a cardiologist or your family physician.
So what happens is you get rolled into the hospital, and they do blood pressure, look at your heart, they look at you visually, and they make a decision there. And that's what triage is. That's what it is. Hey, this guy's fine. And triage is, we got this valuable asset here. Should we use it or not?
Exactly. So the whole idea is you have this emergency room full of patients. Which ones do you want to see first? Maybe the ones that observably look really bad. Maybe they're not the ones you should really see first. So you do some testing. You know, I like to say if you go into an emergency room with chest pains, whether it's in the U.S. or anywhere else in the world, there's a standard set of things that you're going to do, or that are going to be done. Standard set of tests that are going to be run. Those tests may vary a little bit depending on the availability of skilled people, the availability of technology. But you're going to get the same set of tests run everywhere, and then they're going to make a decision about whether it's a true positive or not.
Well, there are a lot of parallels with medical. I never thought of it, but you know, I have a friend who whose wife is a medical doctor, and they had a recently moved to Virginia Beach. Anyway, there must be a standard process if you work in the emergency room. There's got to be a process. Someone who's rolled in at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night and he's drunk. You go bang, bang, bang. And what you try to do is try to very quickly focus in on whether this is a real problem, not a problem. And then you go from there. So you have to have some like repetitive tasks that you know exactly what to do. And that's exactly what you guys do.
That's exactly what we do. And we help security teams do that. We help them get organized. We help them organize so they can triage more efficiently and preserve their precious resources and handle the really important cases that go to the ICU, handle them more rapidly, and create better patient outcomes.
Now, my guess is that if you're a nurse working in the emergency room on a Saturday night, someone's going to roll in there with a gunshot wound. All of a sudden, that gets way up on the list for priorities, and you handle it real quickly. Now, I've been to emergency rooms. I've seen people walk in with well baby visits in the emergency room. It amazes me. But that's still an emergency room, and you have to prioritize that.
That's right. It's highly analogous to what we do.
And so what someone can be is they can say, oh, this is a problem. Are we going to waste our resources on this? Well, we have to take and prioritize that and see what's going on. Got to quote the IRS here, of all times, after I wrote that big check in April. What they say is that 400% increase in spear phishing going out there. So people are coming after my govies. They're going after people listening to the show, aren't they? And they're testing and testing every single day.
Every single day.
And I don't know how to keep up with this. You know, I read people, I follow people on Twitter like David Rubal, and I'm going to start following your company, and I follow Kyle and see what's going on. You know, so I could do this 24 hours a day. And guess what? I'm still behind. So I don't know how else to, unless you systematize it somehow.
There's a reason emergency rooms are open 24 hours a day.
Because no one knows when something's going to pop open.
Exactly.
Can you have an example of maybe an agency you work with that's used some of your system to help them prevent some of this stuff from happening?
So we work with a number of federal agencies around automating their security operations and around concepts for how they can get better. And, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about architectures and about processes and about how they take our product and maybe fit it in a framework that they have for how they want to operate. So there's a interagency group up at Johns Hopkins that's called the Integrative Adaptive Cyber Defense, and so that's IACD, and they are spending a lot of time attempting to think through for both the federal government and for some large public enterprises like big financials, how do you codify this realm of security operations in an architecture in a way that makes it useful and actionable.
I had a guy in here years ago who talked about enterprise architecture. He handed me this grid that was like in 6-point type and had all these boxes and I said, this is too complicated. It has to be automated in order to understand a little bit better. So let me try to automate this process for myself. You got to be vigilant, okay? Got to patch, okay? You got to decommission unsupported operating systems, and you probably have to segment networks. But doing this with a spreadsheet and sitting around and talk to a team, there's always going to be gaps in there. I don't know how you can have a smart bunch of PhDs. There's going to be gaps.
So the attackers have an asymmetric advantage. If you're an attacker or if you're a sophisticated attacker and you want to get into a network, you're probably going to get in. If you're a consumer and you get fish, they're very simple, low-tech fishes. You know, traditionally they come from Nigeria, someplace like that. But if you're a large enterprise, let's say you're a defense contractor, let's say you're a federal agency, attackers will go and build whole entire web pages and infrastructure to try to dupe you into thinking that you're on the federal site or you're on your company site when in fact you're not. And they only need to get typically one person to click. They could get the network and then they could move laterally. WannaCry is a little different because it moves laterally very rapidly because it's because of its worm-like behavior, and it's exploiting what is essentially, although not technically a zero day, essentially a zero day. But the whole idea is get in and move laterally, and you only need to get in one time.
While you were speaking, I was taking down notes, and I just these words came in. Threat awareness training program, and that's what you're doing with the SAN coming up in next month, aren't you?
That's correct. We're trying to educate people on our product, but we're also trying to get people to step back and think about their enterprise and how they manage human behavior in that enterprise, or how they incent better behavior.
Managing human behavior. Whew, good luck with that. I don't know how else to do it besides automating it. There's got to be some way to do it. So if you're listening to this show and let's say the Redskins are playing and it's 6 months from now and you're trying to figure out what to do, so where do you think my listeners should go for information about threat awareness? What are two or three sources that you read or maybe you can suggest them to visit?
I guess the first would be Google, right? Because there's always new sources. Like anything else, it's a dynamic environment. As far as threat awareness for the federal enterprises, their first stop should probably be U.S. CERT. At DHS in terms of understanding what the current threat environment looks like. If you're an enterprise and you have outsourced your IT to a service provider, then you should be having a robust dialogue with your service provider as well around threat awareness and what they can provide.
According to Information Week, that is a survey of commercial companies, 95% of organizations have employees seeking to bypass security controls. You think that's true with my listeners? I hope not.
I hope it's not that high, but if you look at, I don't think 95% of people in those organizations are bad people. I don't think most of them are intentionally seeking to harm their company or their enterprise. The real issue becomes that very often in large enterprises, security controls get in the way of expediency of doing business. And so it really comes down to, just like in the real world where we trade off to a great degree today our privacy for the utility of being able to have products show up at our door rapidly, being able to use free web services. It's the same thing. People, at the end of the day, people want to get stuff done. And if the security controls interfere with their ability to get stuff done and get it done fast, then they have a decision to make.
If you look at what's happened in Washington, D.C. in the last 6 months, we'll just look at it from a security perspective. 4,000 people have left the federal government. Many have been replaced. Does that mean that their email has been decommissioned? So what happens if someone appropriates that email and sends an email to John Jolly and you go, well, I know this. This is an opportunity for spear phishing, just this transition, isn't it?
It is, but even it's also an opportunity for, in general, there's, you know, typically what you'll see is you'll see email addresses spoofed. So even if you've left, even if the email's been decommissioned, that doesn't necessarily mean that somebody can't make it look like it's an email from you and make it appear to be an email from you and try to induce me to click.
Wow. And one way to do that is either active training, threat awareness, or have some kind of a systematic approach. I don't know how else to, you know, threat either rely on people to be smart enough to figure it out or have some kind of system.
Well, you know, if you get an email with a link in it and you're not sure, one of the first things you could do is you could take your mouse and hover over the link and look at the bottom of your browser. And if the, you know, if the link at the bottom of the browser is www.wehackyou.ru,
yeah.
You know, you might want to think about clicking it. But it, oftentimes there are clues, misspellings or just websites or domain names that don't make sense. And oftentimes they're very present and people click anyways because they're very excited to click on the link.
Got to be wary about that. So that's why threat awareness fits in. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We just had an involved conversation with John Jolly, president and CEO at Syncurity. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.